tells us, continuing the theme of Ha'ala,
that how full of Magvina al Hashulchan v'ero nechol the Rebbe Shammai. But Beisola Omerim lo olav al nechol. The Omer of Yosti is emekula Beishamai and Chomer Beisola. So this is one of the things where Beishamai is the Veikil and Beisola is the Machmir. And Beis the Shulchan Omer of Shulchan Shochol olav. Abol Shulchan Shasodur olav is the Tavshel and those in Zeh Bitzad Zeh v'ino Choshish. So Rebbe Yosti is the Tainu Kama. So what's the difference? So v'chitema achila gufa ikibena. You see, if you're going to say that achila is the issue, the kamer tana kama, that the tana kama mentions of bahala kam iflugi, b'achila lo plugi. So amri labi yosi achila gufa mikula beishamay so beisila. So if that's going to say b'hatanu biyosi amr shisha dvara mikula beishamay yom chum beisila v'zu achas mehen. Of all the magvina al shulchan ve'eron echol the beishamay beisila amrim lo all of the echol. So, Ella Hakamash from Lansa, rather, what's the whole point here? To teach you that Man Tanakama, Reb Yossi. This is all there to tell you that the Tanakama is Reb Yossi. And Kala Omer Tavar, Bishem Omra, Mevi Ga'ula Ali Olam. And that this is in keeping with the halacha, that it's important to us to try to make sure to say something in the name of the individual who stated it. And how do we know this? Shenamar v'tomer Esther l'melech b'shem Mordechai. Okay, so here, what do we find? So we find an interesting din, and clearly this is a kpeda that even if the Gemara had never said it, so we know throughout Shas that there is a very impressive concern to try to make sure that there is always a careful line of attribution. So it's hard not to be affected by how you find on every page in Shas that the Gemara will say, so-and-so said the name of so-and-so, who heard from so-and-so, who said from so-and-so, who said from so-and-so, someone else. And then it'll repeat the whole thing because somewhere in the middle it was, but maybe it was someone else, and so they'll repeat the whole thing again. So clearly, there is a tremendous kpeda to try to preserve a line of attribution. And here, the Gemara mentions it as an affirmative value. So I'd like to spend a few minutes, again, maybe it'll spill over a little bit into tomorrow, but I'll spend a few minutes trying to understand this notion of Kol HaMevi Dvar B'Shem Omro, which is also seasonal a bit, because it also roots itself in Purim, and actually this Gemara appears also in Maseches Megillah, so we're almost at Shloshim Yom. I don't mean to diss Tu B'Shvat at all, you know, Tu B'Shvat should get its proper due, but just like by Purim time we're already talking about Pesach, so by Tu B'Shvat time we're already talking about Purim, so we're within striking distance. So this is a Purim topic as well, so maybe also it's a reason to give it a little attention more. Are you raising your hand?
No.
Okay, so maybe first we'll mention just a vort before getting into some of the details, and especially in light of the Purim reference. So here, this idea appears a few times. This is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. This is the last of the Drachim Shahatara Niknes Behen. So it's also, I guess, a Parsha theme that as we anticipate Yisro, as we anticipate the Kabbalah Satorah this week, so we have to make sure we have all the midos necessary in order to be Makabal the Torah. So one of the midos that the Mishnah mentions is a person should be Mevi Dover B'Shem Omro. And the Gemara has the statement that we have here. The Gemara also has in Maseches Megillah, telling us that when Mordechai told the plot to Esther, the plot against the king, so Esther relates it to the king in the name of Mordechai. What many people like to point out is the irony that here, the Gemara quotes this line without telling us who said it. What exactly to do with that? It's not accurate to say that this sentence appears without any attribution at all, because the Gemara Maseches Megillah does have it with attribution, but at least the fact that it appears here in Chulin and Avos as well without attribution is interesting, and some have definitely made note of that. But Rav Huttner has a very fascinating piece and it's a nice introduction to the whole idea in the Pachad Yitzchak and Purim. Says we see a link here between three concepts. There's a link here between a citation and the name of the author, and Purim and Geula. So what is the link between those three things? Why is it that we term all of this Geula? What is the particular connection that has to Purim? And how is that this idea of maybe Davar B'Shem Momro connects to that? Anyone want to take a stab at it? That's particularly challenging. All right, so fine. So we won't make a try. But Rav Huttner linked the three by saying as follows. He says, what's the definition of Geula? What does it mean to redeem something? He says, Geula means to be reconnected to your source of life. He says, Galus is to be separated from your source of life. That is exile. While Geula is to be reconnected to your source of life. So we look to be, right now we are in Golus, we are separated from Eretz Yisrael, we're separated from, at least in the full sense of Kvod Shamayim and Eretz Yisrael, everything that entails. So in the Beis HaMikdash and everything with that. So that's what it means to be in Golus. So to be Nigal means to be reconnected to that. So in that sense, Purim is a time of Geula, and it's a way that parallels the idea of maybe Davar B'Shem Omro. It's because a citation without a source is cut off from where it comes from. A quote has meaning because it has an author. And if you separate the quote from the author, so essentially it's in Galus, it's taken away from its source of meaning. So when you take care to associate the quote with the author, so that is maybe Geula to that source. You are bringing it back to its connection, bringing it back to its source of life. So that itself is an act of Geula. And it says, in a sense, it's the inverse of what we have happening when it comes to Purim. Because Chazal tell us, and this also makes it very much a parsha topic, so I guess we have a lot of synergy going on, so it connects the daf that we're up to, the parsha that we're up to, and the time of the year, so that's pretty good. So the Gemara Masechet Shabbos and Daf Peches tells us that at the time of Kabbalah Satorah, we weren't really fully willing to accept the Torah. That even though the Psukim sound like we were, even though it says Nasa v'nishma, but we know, well-known statement in Chazal, that Kafu Aleim Harki Gigas, that we had to be compelled. And in that sense, so it wasn't really fully of our free will. And then the Gemara says, so when was this rectified? When was it made something that we actually did fully endorse? When did that happen? Purim time. And that, the Gemara says, the Pasuk in Megillas Esther, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. So what does that mean, says the Gemara? Kimu ma-shekiblu kfar. That the Jews accepted the Torah at Har Sinai, in this week's Parsha, but it wasn't fully of their own free will. But comes Purim time, after the salvation of Purim, so then they were makabalit of their own free will, they were makayimit, that's kimu v'kiblu ha'yud. So in a sense, as Futner explains, that's the inverse situation. That here you have a quote, Nasa v'nishma, that's associated with the author, with the Jewish people, but it's not genuine, they didn't really mean it. So it's
kind of artificially connected. And comes Purim, and they did mean it. So that restores the meaning, that restores the significance into the quote. So that is Geula in the other sense. It says with footnote, that's the common element among these three ideas, the notion of Geula, of restoring life, of going back to the source of life, and maybe Dover B'Shem Omro, and how Purim is such a Geula as well. Purim is a Geula in the more basic sense, but also a Geula in this sense, in the sense of reconnecting us to our meaning in our quotations when we said Nasa V'Nishma. Okay? Make sense? So another word, also not about the Purim part, but just about maybe about the Geula in a Zaytay is even more Alpi Darach HaDresh, just mention it quickly, in the Tshuvas Shari Shamayim. So it makes reference to why Geula, out of all the things you could be saying about this, and why don't you just say it straight, it's good, it's bad not to. What's the idea of Geula? So he notes also that we have a mitzvah in the Torah of Tochacha. We have a mitzvah that we're supposed to give Musar to somebody who's doing the wrong thing. And Chazal say that the rabbinic leaders are sometimes hated because they give people Musar about what they're doing wrong. So he discusses there, he says, isn't that a strange situation? That Chazal tell us that a person should try to have a pleasant manner, and that what's good in Shemayim is when people are considered to be pleasant by the people who surround them. And yet, here's a mitzvah in the Torah, which Chazal are saying are going to get people to hate you. So how exactly is that going to work? And why should the people hate you if you're doing what you're supposed to do? That's your job. They hire the rabbi in order to keep them on the straight and narrow, and then when they do that, they're going to hate them. So he wanted to say that the more a person is able to do that, not as a matter of his own kavod, but as an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, so then the better it's taken. So it's maybe Dover B'Shem Romer is saying in that context that when somebody is able to give the message in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not in his own name, so then people take it the right way, and then you're actually able to be maybe Geula Le'olam. But when that gets garbled, so that's when people get upset, and that's when doesn't necessarily have the right result. Okay, it's also certainly Alpi Darach HaDrush. In that case, that's not what it's not really what this Gemara is getting at. But okay, so what is this Gemara getting at? So what is the ikar of this din? And this has many implications, both in terms of practicality and in terms of a larger sugya, because this actually, last year we learned Bava Kamma, we had an opportunity to talk a little bit about this, because really through a completely different entry point, we talked a little bit about the question of intellectual property. And that got us a little bit into some intersecting points about this, which we won't do at length this year, because, or at least in this context, because it will take us far afield. Maybe we'll just mention some of the points that overlap. But what would you say, because there are at least two answers to this, if not more, but what would you say is the main focus of this din? What's the main purpose of requiring one to be maybe Dover B'Shem Omro? I can think of at least two. If you were to...
Minimizes conflict, I guess.
Okay, interesting point. Why would you focus on that?
I don't know why I focus on it. It was the reason I thought, because, I mean, well, if you misattribute something, well, I mean, someone's kavod might feel, you know, someone might feel that their kavod is slighted.
You know, it's fascinating that you focus on that, because you would think it's kind of a secondary point, but I'll just, you know, mention that for a second, because to use that as kind of an entry point into the discussion, because a little bit what I was trying to figure out here by asking this question is this something that you're doing for the speaker, or is this something you're doing for other reasons? So let's assume for a second that you're doing this for the speaker, and that there's a problem for the author if you don't cite him when mentioning the thought. So what is the nature of the problem? Is it theft? So academic integrity, you think you're joking. Yeah. I mean, you sound like you're totally, I think you'd be, but it's no, a serious.
I was like poking fun a little bit at the plagiarism. But, so they don't call it plagiarism, they call it academic integrity.
But
so
why poke fun, though? I mean, not the, because of perm, but I'm a...
it's almost perm.
But isn't it a serious point, though?
It is a serious point.
Right, so isn't that also a possibility? So couldn't it also be an academic... If it's in terms of academic integrity, so then it's not necessarily about who you're quoting. Right, so that's an important chakira, I think, to consider at the very beginning. Right, is it, and these, you'll see that these are both significant possibilities. Right, so is this something that you're doing for the sake of the author? And maybe it should be subject to his pages? Or is this something because you don't want to misrepresent yourself? And thus is a function, like you put it, of academic integrity. And it's going to make a difference because there are nafkaminas and standards of academic integrity. It's interesting because those shift a little bit. Nowadays, we have something which is a real chiddush in terms of the whole concept, that nowadays is an idea called self-plagiarism, which is a pretty fascinating idea that somebody can be accused, and people have lost careers over this, over citing themselves without attribution from where they're getting their not acknowledging it's pre-published material, which is hard to figure out exactly how that fits into these models, or when exactly that should be an expectation. But in any event, so is this about academic integrity, or is this about not hurting somehow the author? Now, say hurting somehow, because there are a range of ways in which you could be hurting him. So are you stealing from him? So do we recognize this as property? That do we recognize intellectual property in general as property? That you are essentially taking without attribution, and therefore is it gazel of some sort? Or should we say that, no, it's not actual gazel for any number of reasons. Either do we not necessarily fully recognize intellectual property in the literal sense, or is Torah different for better or for worse? It could be different in either direction. Or is it somehow a different kind of offense against the author? Now, it's interesting, because that's what I was saying there, Levi, when you mentioned conflict. So I just thought that was interesting, because on the surface, it seems like that's somewhat of a side concern. Right? You think that if we're worried about the interpersonal angle here, if we're worried about an offense against the author, so then why don't we call it theft or something akin to it? Right? Now, theft, as we'll have to see, and again, I think we will end up spilling over a little bit into tomorrow. I apologize for the timing today. But if we are talking about theft, so we could say it on a couple of levels. You could say that it's theft of the material itself. Or you could say that we don't actually recognize the material as tangible or as subject to ownership. So it's not really theft of the material. But maybe it's theft of credit. Maybe that is something tangible. Or maybe it's less than that. So what about the fact that maybe what Levi was mentioning isn't necessarily so secondary? What about it's not necessarily that there's a recognizable right, but the fact that it causes major societal problems to allow citations without attribution, or to allow boundary violations of this sort. And to say boundary violations, it's noteworthy that some of the sources that talk about this cite the pasuk in Chumash of Losasig Gevul Reacha, which is an interesting reference. Literally, that's talking about, we normally cite that pasuk nowadays, talking about competition. But the pasuk literally is talking about moving boundary markers and stealing land that way, but it's a type of stealing that doesn't involve taking the object that you're stealing, but taking the markers that designate where the property is. So here, the idea that it's conflict, the reason I find that particularly interesting also, is because, as we discussed last year at greater length than we're going to do this year, and again, this year we just want to focus on this Gemara and not talk about the whole sugya, but there were those who felt that there isn't really necessarily a basis to call it theft, but there are some who thought that maybe it should be included in a Mishnah in Maseches Gittin, where the Mishnah lists certain activities which are considered to be gazel midrabanan. And that gazel midrabanan, one sefer that's all devoted to this theme, the sefer Mishnah Yoshua, so he rejected that because he thought the Mishnah is only listing specific things. That's the only places we have it. But I thought there were a few other indications that maybe it's actually a pretty compelling theory, because maybe in addition to other theories, but that the point being that there you find that it's specifically gazel mipnei darchei shalom, that there are things listed in the Mishnah which are not necessarily subject to the absolute parameters of theft, but that allowing these boundaries to be breached cause machlokas, cause societal rifts, and therefore the rabbis prohibited that. So intellectual property such as this fit very nicely into those frameworks, that maybe this isn't necessarily theft in the literal sense, doesn't maybe fit the parameters of what's called theft, if that's the argument one's going to make. Not everyone would agree with that, but I'm saying, but let's pause that for a second. But certainly, it has societal impact that is comparable. So it is, I think, somewhat compelling, at least just conceptually, to say that there would be an Issur Drabanan. It would fit in with the model, even if it's not listed there, but it would fit in the model of the Surim Drabbanim, Mishum Dachei Shalom, of a type of a Gazel Drabbanim. Not necessarily from the rights perspective as much as the societal impact perspective. Make sense? Okay, so there is a citation of the Halacha. So here, as far as this is concerned, so it's not phrased here as an Isser. And it's phrased as a value that if you make sure to do this, you bring geula. And this causes many of the commentaries to raise the question, why is it phrased that way? Why is it not phrased more as a Isser or a Chiyuv or the like? And we do find it showing up in some halachic sources. Right? You got a chance to see a little bit in the chorus, so it's a question what the focus is when it's brought in the sources. There is an additional concern coming from a different direction of Omer Dover Mirabo. Somebody should be saying something specifically from his Rebbe. That's the way it's brought in Hilchos Talmud Torah. But do you get a chance to see the Magen Avraham? So the Magen Avraham and Aruch Chaim, this is a real collector's item, Magen Avraham, because not only is it a collector's item for you to collect, but he is the collector in this Magen Avraham. So Magen Avraham, it's in the Kuf Nun Vav, Silchus Masu Matan. So there, he collects all of the orphaned halachas, essentially. So all of the halachas which he thinks people should know about, and they aren't found elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch. So there are a lot of fascinating things. It's worth reading just down for that reason. But he has a lot of fascinating things that he brings there, a lot of fascinating comments. It's an education of itself. So among the things that he brings there is that somebody who was over Dover B'Shem Omro is in violation of a lav. So that's interesting. It's a violation of a losase. So what's the losase? So there's a reference to a Gemara in the Dharm. But the later Svarim point out here again, I guess there's another level of irony because it seems to be a misattribution. Because as the Behuda points out in the Tshuva and others point out, they went through the whole Bavli and Yerushalmi and they don't see what reference in the Dharm he's talking about. But there seems to be a Medrash. There's a Medrash which points to the Pasuk, Lo Sigzol Dal. You should not rob the poor person. So you could ask, the poor person doesn't have what to steal. So we're talking about something here which isn't necessarily monetary, which doesn't have object value, but something even a poor person can generate and can possess, and therefore apparently there is a gezel involved. So it's interesting to say that's a lav. First of all, that pasuk, where does that pasuk appear?
Mishle.
Exactly, very good. And it's not in Chumash, it's in Mishle, it's in Perech of Beis, Pasuk of Beis. So it's interesting how to relate to that as a lav. But the focus then seems to be a gezel type of consideration. So we have to try to figure out, so again, we will spill over a little bit into tomorrow, and I apologize for the constricted framework today, but if we look at it as a offense against the speaker, whether it's gezel, or whether it's going to cause machlokas, or whether it's something else, or if we look at it as an issue of academic integrity, so just very quickly, what might be some nafkaminas? Can you think off the top of your head? What might be some ramifications, seeing it one way or the other? Yeah, Yossi?
The person who you're quoting is okay with that being quoted.
Oh, so that's a big one, right? That's a huge one. So what if the person is Michael? Happens all the time. Right? What if the person says, I'm okay with it, you can have it? So does that matter? Okay. There are some who suggest it doesn't matter for another reason. They say, it's nice that he's Meichel and is covered. What right does he have to be Meichel and the Gula? You know, so if this really is a step towards redemption, so then you shouldn't allow Mechila for that reason. Okay. Any other nafkaminas you can think of? Yeah?
What if you're not sure who said it?
Okay. So then how much does that factor in? And then maybe you're on the risk of something else, right? So if you...
You shouldn't say it at all.
Or shouldn't say it, or maybe you're running a road of misquoting something, right? And then you're running a risk of sheker. And what are the risks of misquoting? Maybe that's worse than the risks of quoting without attribution. What else? Any other possible nafkaminas? What if you say, I heard from someone, but I don't want to say who? So then presumably it's not going to be an academic integrity issue as much as a... maybe it's a gezel issue, maybe it's not. But so it's the flip side of the mechila. Right? If the guy is mochel, so then he may have an academic integrity problem, but not necessarily a problem against the author. If you say, I heard from somebody, but you don't say who, so then you don't have a Gnevis Das problem, but you may still be shortchanging the author.
Or what if the author even specifically asks not to quote him?
So then that also opens a very important... What if he says not to quote him and says, you can't quote my idea? Or what if he says he can't quote the idea either? Does he have the right to do that? That's a highly controversial topic. Do you have...
Off the record.
Right, but let's say he's Mechadish or Torah thought, and he says, you can't quote it. Does he have the right to do that? For other reasons, don't want to mention names here on this point, but this is a topic of great controversy because there are those who have quoted Torah thoughts from great Torah scholars without attribution and have defended the case, whether convincingly or not, by saying that the creator of the thought has not allowed it to be quoted. So if I can't quote him, so I'm not supposed to talk about the sugya. How would I, like, am I not allowed to advance Talmud Torah? So that's a controversial point in of itself. And again, it's been subject to various levels of convincingness. So, all right, so we'll just try to fill in a little bit more about this tomorrow, and hopefully they're not too long, just to share a few more thoughts about this. And then we get into this whole idea of how much of a break has to be between fleishiks and milchiks and the like, which is, or just the notion of what that break is about. And so that's what our next Gemara is about, so that's a major thing that should get us into the next day or two, and then get us to the next daf. So essentially, just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that the Gemara has this idea of maybe Davar Hashem Omro brings Gula, and then brings a Raya from Purim, from Megillah. We gave Rav Huttner's words connecting Gula, Purim, and maybe Davar, and what they all have to do with each other. And then we spoke about this other idea of the Shair Shemayim, about Gula and Tocha. You say Nakar's Baruch's name, it's really more of a side idea. And then we pose the question of what is the real focus here? Is this about not shortchanging the author? And is it a type of gezel? Or is it a gezel of the credit rather than the item? Or is it not that? Is it maybe something else? And maybe it's about avoiding machlokes. We talked about the theory that intellectual property might be governed by some kind of issur d'rabbanan, which is about Darchei Shalom, which maybe connected to that, or maybe it's more about academic integrity and avoiding Gneivas Das and making clear that it's someone else's idea. And we talked about at least two possible nafkaminas of seeing these things. One is, what if the speaker is mochel? If the speaker is mochel, so then if it's about his covet, so then you seemingly should be okay. But if it's about the integrity of you, so then it's not going to help that he is mochel. We mentioned also at some point that even if he's mochel, what about the gula? Who's mochel on that? But then the other angle, that if it's about the academic integrity purely, so then maybe you could satisfy that by saying, this isn't my idea, I heard it someone else, but not necessarily identifying who that person specifically is. So then that's also a question. All right, so God willing, we'll just say a little bit more about that tomorrow. Wish everyone a warm and safe day, and hopefully everyone should be full of Shlema. And you will go slow.